Today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
Do you like your voice? I haven't found one that I wanted to replace it with yet, but it's a weird voice. I'm hearing it sometimes. I'm thinking, who is that? It's me.
And welcome to Rockin' the Suburbs. This is a daily music podcast. My name is Patrick Foster, and on behalf of my co-host and co-founder and good friend Jim Linehan, I want to welcome everyone to this episode. Today is the 25th of May as you listen to this podcast, and unfortunately, it is a rather somber day and has been a rather somber afternoon as I record this. Just found out about an hour and a half ago, following a message from intern Sam, that Tina Turner, the legendary rock and roll, R&B, blues singer, and actress, and inspiration to many, has passed away at the age of 83. A statement from her publicist, Bernard Doherty, said, "Tina Turner, the queen of rock and roll, has died peacefully today at the age of 83 after a long illness in her home in Kuznacht near Zurich, Switzerland. With her, the world loses a music legend and a role model. Rest in power, Tina Turner." Tina was born Anna Mae Bullock in the year 1939 in Brownsville, Texas, and she spent some time growing up in Nutbush, Texas. Sang in the choir there, which is the first time she sang publicly in her life. Her mother and father split and left Texas, and Tina and her sisters were sent to live in Brownsville, Texas, with her grandmother. She lived in Brownsville until she was about 16 years old when her grandmother passed, and she was reunited with her mother in the city of St. Louis, Missouri, where her mother was living. It was in St. Louis that Tina first saw the performance of Ike Turner and his Kings of Rhythm, performing in a club in East St. Louis. Tina was mesmerized by Ike's performance and guitar playing, and eventually worked up the nerve to ask him if she could sing with his band, and he didn't really respond too enthusiastically to that. Later, during another set, there was a break taken by the band, and Tina took it upon herself to get a microphone and go up on stage and sing a song. I think it was a B.B. King tune, if I remember reading correctly, and Ike was blown away by that and immediately went over to Tina and asked her what other song she knew, and she ended up sitting in with the band for the rest of the night, and from then on in, despite her mother's protestations about her age and perhaps about Ike's character, she decided to join Ike full-time and become a member of his group. She recorded a couple of demos early on before she had changed her name to Tina, and one recording executive memorably on hearing one of the first records that Tina's voice was on described it as, and I love this, screaming dirt. That's just an incredible way to describe it. And this is all the way back in around 1960. And she had that quality already, that amazing huskiness and toughness and world weariness in her voice. Ike eventually decided that she should change her name to Tina. And they debuted in the year 1960 with the single "A Fool in Love."
Oh, there's something on my mind. Won't somebody please, please tell me what's wrong?
You're just a fool, you know you're in love.
What do you say?
You got to face it, to live in this world. You take the good, and you take the bad. Sometimes you're happy, and sometimes you're sad.
One more time.
You know you love him, you can't understand why he treats you like he do, and he's such a good man.
He's got me smiling, and I should be ashamed. Got me laughing when my heart is in pain.
That song was a big success and led to the creation of the Ike and Tina Turner Review, featuring Ike's Kings of Rhythms and a trio of background singers, the Ikettes. And this was a formula that would go on to be very, very successful. They played constantly, did the group, sometimes playing for 90 days straight without a day off. Their success allowed them to be one of the few acts that were allowed to play racially desegregated audiences in the South in the 1960s, which was a rarity. They were on as many as 10 different small labels during that time in the 60s. They made a bunch of different singles, several albums and songs. And it was right around the time of 1966 that they got together with Phil Spector and issued a single on his Phillies label titled River Deep, Mountain High. Despite this song being considered by Phil Spector one of his greatest productions, the song was not a huge hit in the United States, was, however, very successful in the UK. The success of that song allowed Ike and Tina to grab an opening slot on the Rolling Stones 1966 tour, which really began to raise their profile. And in the year 1967, Tina became the first female and first black artist to appear on the cover of Rolling Stone magazine. All this while the band was continuing to tour, and they had their review down to be one of the most incredibly dynamic acts in all of music, occasionally rivaling that of James Brown, according to people that saw both of those reviews perform. They even had a residency that was very popular in 1968 in Las Vegas, where many musical stars of the day and budding musical stars were able to see Ike and Tina's review. Eventually parlayed this success and growing reputation into a slot opening up for the Rolling Stones on their very high-profile 1969 United States tour, their first in 3 years. And it was during this tour that Mick Jagger would often be despondent after watching Ike and Tina's opening set, because Tina had so much power, so much energy, and such stage presence. And Mick admits to this day that many of the moves that he perfected on stage that became classic Mick Jagger moves through the 70s were lifted from some of the stuff Tina was doing on stage. And famously on Madison Square Garden, Janis Joplin came out and sang with Tina Turner in a famous opening set before the Stones concert, and became one of the legendary moments in rock and roll. After the Rolling Stones tour, Ike and Tina, they began to put a little more rock sound into their review, toned down a little bit on the blues, and began looking at slightly different material. They had a hit in the year 1971 with a cover of Creedence Clearwater Revival's Proud Mary. Tina began writing more material on her own during this time, and she wrote a song that touched on her own childhood and adolescence called Nutbush City Limits. That was issued in the year 1973. And I believe appeared on her first solo album, which was entitled Tina Turns the Country On. She also, around this time, got an appearance in the Who's film version of their musical opera Tommy. She played the Acid Queen and for several years parlayed that image into albums and screen appearances and television appearances. Her time with Ike came to a head in the year 1976. And throughout the entire period we have been discussing since she started singing with Ike in the early 1960s up until the mid-1970s, the relationship between Tina and Ike was not one of harmony, to say the least. Ike was physically, verbally abusive, mentally abusive. He once broke Tina's jaw right before they went on stage. He tortured her in many different ways. He was promiscuous. He was not a loving person. He was incredibly moody. He was a man who had many demons, and unfortunately, he took them out on other people, and mainly Tina. And she suffered for a very long time. In her 2018 biography, which is one of several she has written or co-authored, she said, "My relationship with Ike was doomed the day he figured out I was going to be his moneymaker. He needed to control me economically and psychologically so I could never leave him." And this matter came to a head in July of 1976 when Ike and Tina got into a very heated altercation on the way to a hotel in Dallas, Texas. And while Ike slept, Tina made the decision to leave him once and for all with just I believe a gas credit card and just some change in her pocket. She ran across a highway near their hotel and took refuge in another hotel and hid until she was able to get away. And it was almost a year and a half before their divorce was finally made legal. But this was a situation that dogged Tina for many, many, many years. She was left responsible for many of the canceled dates for the Ike and Tina Turner Review. She got a few things in the settlement, but not enough to pay off the debt she had accrued or help her be stable. She had to play small clubs and resort to any kind of appearance she could get to just make ends meet. And for a couple of years, she was actually getting food stamps from the government just to get by. There were also children involved. She had a child when she was very young in 1958 with a member of Ike's band before those two had been married. She had a son with Ike as well and adopted his children from her previous relationship and was responsible for a lot of things and a lot of people at that time. Put a couple solo albums out in the late 1970s, but those unfortunately did not fare very well. They sold poorly, wasn't put together by a musical team that really had a sort of a vision of where Tina was in her career. And by the time the early 1980s had rolled around, she was essentially an oldies act. She would play in hotels and at supper clubs and essentially wherever she could get work, but mainly to audiences that knew her work from the 1960s and just wanted to hear her older songs, including some of her 70s hits and her 60s hits. And it was in the year 1983 that she was offered a deal to record initially just a single for Capitol Records. And this turned out to be a really good break for Tina because, number one, it was a great song.
Let me say the same, baby. Since we've been together, ooh, loving you forever is all I need. Let me be the one you come running to. Thank you.
impeccably arranged and incredibly sung. And based on the success of that, Capitol Records decided to give her a shot to make a whole album. And boy, were they glad they did. The record that resulted from this, called Private Dancer, was the catalyst and the first blow in one of the greatest, you know, comebacks and turnarounds in rock music history and music history. And it marked the start of a complete second chapter in her career, a tale of resilience, a tale of persistence, a tale of talent that never went away. As Jim Linehan said in a message, I mean, she was a true rock and roller. And part of being a true rock and roller is that persistence to come through things and make it. And this was an incredible turnaround. I mean, in the documentary film Tina, she said Private Dancer was her debut album. She said, I don't consider it a comeback because the real Tina had never arrived. This whole time, she felt like she was working up to becoming this Tina Turner, this persona that by the end of 1984 was just as big as the huge, massive musical icons of that year. You mentioned Tina Turner in the same breath with Bruce Springsteen, Michael Jackson, Cyndi Lauper, The Culture Club, Duran Duran, all those big 80s stars. And it was just an incredible record. And I think one of the most amazing things about it, too, was that many of the audience who were getting into Tina's music at this time were pop music fans, and they probably didn't know very much about her 1960s performance in soul and R&B and may not have known anything about River Deep, Mountain High, or any of that stuff that happened. So that makes it very fascinating as well. The record itself, when you look back at it now, the track listing, I mean, I Might Have Been Queen, Show Some Respect, I Can't Stand the Rain, Let's Stay Together, Private Dancer, 1984, and of course, What's Love Got to Do with It? It's an impeccably put together collection, impeccably sung. A lot of really good musicians. Jeff Beck appears on the record. There was a song written by Mark Knopfler. All kinds of people that supported her. And it just really made this record one for its time and place. But as an achievement, when you listen to it today, and I was just putting on a few tracks as we prepared to do this podcast, and it just holds up as well as it ever did.
Of your hand makes my pulse react. That it's only the thrill of boy meeting girl opposites attract. It's physical, only logical. You must try to ignore that it means more than. I've got cause to be. There's a name for it. There's a phrase that fits.
And What's Love Got to Do with It? Became not only her first and only number one single, but became the title of a movie based on her life, starring Angela Bassett. That brought her story to a much, much wider audience, and many fans that she had just acquired in 1984 and 85 became aware of what she had gone through and what had happened in her life. From there, she had a story of success. She had another big album in 1986 with Break Every Rule. She got back into performing in movies. She performed in the Mad Max movie, Beyond the Thunderdome. She sang a famous duet with Mick Jagger at Live Aid at one point in 1988, appeared in front of the biggest crowd in a pop music concert. 180,000 people were packed into the Maracanã Stadium in Brazil for a Tina Turner concert. First Greatest Hits collection, Simply the Best, which sold over 7 million copies. Since then, she has done a 50th anniversary tour. There was Tina the Musical. Intern Sam mentioned that he had seen it and said she broke so many barriers. A woman in her mid-40s reached superstardom after a horrific relationship and basically having no money to her name in the 1980s. And I know Sam is a big fan. 2013 had actually become a Swiss citizen. She met a younger man who was a music executive, and they fell in love and eventually got married. She did struggle with health issues for the last decade or so of her life. She had a stroke in 2013. She had intestinal cancer. She went through a kidney transplant, but she credited her Buddhist leanings and her ability to stay calm and enjoy what was happening to her and take it in the best frame of mind as getting her through this. And as Jim said, she was a real rocker and a true rocker at heart, and stayed that way for a very long time through the end of her life. And it's very, very sad that we have to say goodbye to Tina, but she left so much behind, so much to learn about, so much to listen to, so much to watch, that in many ways, she remains as vital as ever. Mackenzie Crenshaw, a listener to our program and someone who's a DJ on a radio station, mentioned to us that she taught some of Tina's work to students in a black music history class she was teaching. And Mackenzie said, "Proud Mary blew their minds, especially the young black women. An icon in pop and an important figure for women in music." Very well said. And of course, as you read stories and look at tributes, you will see all kinds of musical legends from every phase of music history, and especially many current singers who, especially female artists, have been incredibly inspired by Tina. And the tributes are just amazing and heart-rending in many cases, but also very touching, and really gives you an idea of what Tina Turner did in this incredible, one-of-a-kind musical journey and life journey that she took. Rest in power, Tina Turner, passed at the age of 83. And from all of us here at Rockin' the Suburbs, we want to double that sentiment down and say, wherever you are moving now, Tina, we hope you're at peace, and we hope you're going to rest in power. With that, we will talk to you guys tomorrow. Screaming dirt, screaming dirt, screaming dirt, screaming dirt, screaming dirt, screaming dirt, screaming dirt.